And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 833. Continuing our team-by-team previews to get you ready for the 2026 fantasy baseball season. We head to Southern California, the southernmost team in the National League, the San Diego Padres. If you watch Ron Burgundy, you'll know what else they're called. But we will get to that maybe throughout the show as I'm on one today, so it's warning everybody right now. But we'll get to that maybe and more, but we'll talk all things San Diego Padres, hitters, pitchers, and prospects. And in order to help me do this is a friend of mine, a friend of the show. We're getting we went to the bullpen or a pinch hitter, depends on how you want to look at it, to talk some San Diego Padres with me here. He is a prospect writing genius. He's actually really great fantasy baseball writing in general, but he has his own Substack, the Four Seam Fantasy Substack. Make sure you check that out. He writes prospects over at pitcherlist.com. He helps me and Bloom out quite a bit over at Bubba and the Bloom Patreon with the draft kit and much, much more. And you can find him on Twitter at m_ski22. Martin Sikolsky, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great, Bubba. Thanks for having me on. Not a Padres fan by any stretch of the imagination, but I do love me some Don Orsillo, so let's fire it up.
Yeah, Don Orsillo is probably the best thing that's happened to that place in a long, long time. Getting him down there. Good. Just a great Twitter follow because he embraces the La Jolla, San Diego area, goes fishing like every day, just like lives it up. It's like he's retired, but he's to go talk baseball for 4 hours in the evening. It's a good life he has. And real quick for anybody that's listening to this when this is released on Friday, it's Martin's birthday. So make sure you wish him a happy birthday. Yeah. He's getting older. He's joining me and Ryan in a certain club. I'll leave it at that. I embarrassed him enough. We'll leave it there. But happy birthday, my friend. And
appreciate it.
Let's talk some Padres. I usually ask the guests, how do you think the 2025 season went? You're not a fan. Who cares? But they did what they do. They make it interesting, almost get through the dance, and then just not enough when you have a team close by that takes care of business. So let's get to the next part here. Let's talk hitters with the San Diego Padres. And one of the kind of, conundrum's not the right word, but Fernando Tatis Jr. has been, I guess, an enigma each and every year because we saw how good he could be. I mean, 42-25. Then there's been steroids. Then there's been shoulder issues, not always in that order. Last year, played his first big season, played 155 games. We saw the power. We saw the speed. What are you doing with a guy like Fernando Tatis Jr.? Because I just skip him in drafts. But his ADP is around 15 over the last 7 days in D.C., so at least he's on the turn. And if you are getting 20, 30, that's not bad. But I'm torn on his production. Where are you when you look at a guy like Fernando Tatis Jr.?
Yeah, he's kind of my forever fade. He's just never going to be a guy I'm going to pick. Either if I'm at the end of the first round or beginning of the second round, chances are I'm either going to reach to grab somebody at the end of the first, and by the time the second round rolls around, I'm just taking a shot on the best available player on the board, and he's never it for me. The profile is just kind of boring. Like, his home run production's kind of mid, his steals are kind of like, it's a nice collection of stats, but I mean, last year he had to have a monster run production. He had 111 runs scored to even finish, and he finished 27th overall and eighth at the position. And that was with a huge boost in the runs, because normally he's around like 80, 90 runs. So, I mean, he's just a guy that I'm always going to fade. It's just not a thing for me. He's a nice player. He's a really nice player. But unless he's a second round pick, I'm out on Tatis. I just can't do it. I just can't pull the trigger.
Yeah, and that's how I've been perennially. And like I said, certain drafts, he's like creeping into the second round. So now I'm kind of at least acknowledging what's taking place there, because I was easy, just like, we're going right past him. We're not even thinking about it. Because like we both said, is he had to accumulate last year. He finally played a bunch of games. So like, the playing time, he hasn't done a lot. And then the average is and he's still a very good player. It's just for where you're picking him, it becomes very complicated. That's why I always have a tough time explaining. I feel like it's a tough time explaining Tatis, because people think I'm just a hater. And I'm like, no, I don't hate the guy. I just think what the price and the return are two different things. And that's what makes it challenging. Then again, I'm all in on Corbin Carroll. We see how that's going already. So
Tatis is a tough guy to rank in Dynasty too, because it's like he gets lumped in with, you know, with J-Rod and Acuna and Churio, but he doesn't have that same ceiling that those guys have. And now Churio really hasn't gotten his peak yet, but he will soon. But he just doesn't have that same level of that next level. He's done it one time, and we kind of know how he got to that point. So I just, I mean, again, a second round player, I could be all in on Tatis, but in the first round, he's always going to be a guy I'm going to fade.
Yep, totally agree. Let's go to, you mentioned Tatis is boring. This is a different type of boring. This is boring. It's beautiful in Manny Machado, because why I call it boring is it's never like jump off the page guy, but it's literally you can almost sit down and write down his stat line each and every year, and you'll be in the ballpark by the time the season's over. He's going to get you nearly 30 home runs, 25 to 30 home runs. He's actually running a little bit more. His batting average is solid. Run production, he's going to get you 180 to 200 runs in RBIs, give or take. Like, you're going to get really, really good production at a bad third base position. And his ADP is around 41. So what are your thoughts on Machado? Because, again, he doesn't jump off the page, but I think it's a combo of consistency and a bad position.
Yeah, exactly that. He finished fourth of the position last year, top 40 finishing, you know, overall. He's just that steady Eddie that just gets it done every year. He's never going to pop off the page. He's just going to do everything that he can on a day in day. He's a set it forget it kind of guy. I like to use that term in fantasy, but that's what he is. And when you're in a position that's got so much, it's just so top heavy, and then there's a huge cliff. I like having Machado available in the third round, or you know, even possibly even the fourth. You can get him sometimes. I like to have that, you know, that safety there, especially at that position. If I'm not able to get a J-Ram or a Riley or somebody like that early on, I'm perfectly fine taking Machado in the third round and just banking all five categories. And he just does it every year. Last year, 12.5% barrel rate, 51.5% hard hit rate, which is just bonkers. And the guy's like 34 years old. I mean, he's younger than I am. So, but he's just a guy that I'm always going to lean on if I'm in a pinch at that position. You always know what you're going to get. So.
Yep, I agree. Barring anything stupid happen, he's been hurt through some of that and still does it. But anything crazy, like, yeah, you're locked into some goodness at a very, very bad position. All right, this is one where, you know, the kid's going to be 23, still considered, well, he's not technically a prospect, but he's so young. Like, maybe there's something you see in Jackson Merrill, who in his rookie season, monster, 24-16, 292. It was awesome. Hurt a lot in 2025, played hurt. Only got a 16 homers, hit 284. I have a lot of questions with Jackson Merrill. I don't know what to do with Jackson Merrill, basically. His ADP is around 70 over the last 7 days on DCs. What are your thoughts on Jackson Merrill? Because, like I said, we saw this really, really talented 21-year-old. We saw an injured 22-year-old. 23 is still super young. So where are we at here?
I'm all in on Jackson Merrill. I don't have any concerns at all. If you look at his numbers and look at what happened last year, he was clearly hurt. There's no way that he wasn't hurt. We know that he had the hamstring early on, he had the ankle late. He didn't run because of the hamstring. I think it was one of those situations where the expectations of duplicating his rookie season put that pressure on him, and he just wanted to stay on the field. And he still got you 264 with 16 home runs and 126 combined runs at RBI on one leg. And for a kid that just came out of nowhere, not for me because I'm a prospect guy, but came out of nowhere in a rookie year to be a complete star, for him to push through that and to still deliver, even though it wasn't what we got based on his draft price, he still delivered something for us, and it wasn't a complete loss. The skills were pretty much the same. He did have some contact issues. They dipped a little bit across the board. But same time, you and I both play baseball. We know legs are important. We know legs are important for hitters. Things like that are going to happen. I think Merrill just had – it was just the perfect storm. He was hurt. He was trying to play through it. He was pressing to meet expectations. He took some, you know, some extra chances with, you know, chasing a little bit, and the contact rates were bad. But even still, his K rate spiked to 22%, which is still league average. His quality of contact metrics were almost the exact same as they were his rookie year, and he actually took an increase in barrel rate. So an ADP of 75 – when his ADP was 25 last year, it's stealing for me. It's completely theft. So I think he's back to 2020 guy this year. I really do.
Yeah, and that's why I'm glad we talked this one out, because this is one of those players I admit time and time again, I am a very biased person. So like, I have to sit back and I have to take a look at the I knew he was hurt, but I have to tell myself he's young. We still saw this great year in a rookie year, so it might not even be the full player we're seeing. And we're getting, quote-unquote, a discount from previous seasons. Why would I Why would I just cross him off? I'm not saying I'm going to go all in on Jackson Merrill, but why would I cross him off is the question. So you made some very good points there that at least opens my eyes to, as the draft goes on, maybe he fits my team better based on certain starts, so on and so forth, that I at least should have him, like I said, not crossed out, and probably makes for a good auction value as well. Uh-huh. Xander Bogaerts, talking old guys. He's actually younger than Manny, which is funny. He'll be 33 this year. Power's been kind of hit lately. He's been dealing with wrist issues in recent seasons, ankle issues. He's beat up another guy that, for the most part, plays a lot. And 11 homers, 20 steals. Even being beat up, stole 20 bags last year, which is pretty impressive. Hit .263. So, again, similar to Manny, you can put a lot of his stats in there. The power, I guess, is the biggest question with Xander. ADP's .226. What are your thoughts on Xander Bogaerts?
Yeah, this team is just loaded with old, boring guys that just – they just play a lot and they accumulate, and Bogaerts is exactly that. I mean, I literally have written down old reliable Xander Bogaerts because that's what he is. It's double digit homers and steals every year, three straight years in a row with that, a batting average of at least .264. His counting stats are going to be because the lineup is but I mean, they're trending down. He only had 116 combined runs at RBIs last year, which not great, but it's still there. You know, I don't want him as my starting shortstop, I don't think, unless it's my like very last option. I'd rather have him as a middle infielder. But I mean, the quality of contact stuff just isn't there anymore. His barrel rate hasn't been over 7%, or hasn't had a hard hit rate over 40% since 2021, which kind of coincides with the wrist injuries he had in 22 and 23. So I mean, again, a nice middle infield option. I'll run him at shortstop if I have to. I actually added him in a dynasty league because I just needed something steady because I've got Connor Griffin coming up, and I just wanted to have that little plug and play guy in case Griffin struggles or doesn't come up right away. So he's the perfect kind of glue guy for your roster. But if you're banking on him to be a complete star, you probably got the wrong guy.
Yeah, no, he's definitely a depth piece. Glue guy is a great way to put that with a Xander Bogaerts. Nothing flashy, and I would not expect any kind of ceiling anytime soon. I think we're past those days. Those were when he was on Martin's team in Boston. Those were the stealing days. You want to talk about our old guy? Let's get to it. Ramon Laureano's going to be 31 this year. 24 homers, 7 steals, hit .281 between the Orioles and Padres, and he was a stand, like, cleanup hitter. He's projected to hit cleanup again. He was a stud, absolute stud. And I guess the one thing I say is, when he has played, the only other time he played this many games basically was in 2019, 24 homers, 13 steals. When he plays due to either health, steroids, or whatnot, he's actually productive. Now, it's like I said, it's only been twice. ADP's .219. So I think it's that consistent playing time that has ruined his ADP, because if we just go off of last year, this seems like a deal, Martin. So where do you sit on Ramon Laureano?
Yeah, I had that exact same thing down. I was like, career highs in basically everything last year. It's the first time he's been either healthy or not suspended in a long time. And, I mean, all the data supported everything he did. I mean, his hard hit rates, barrel rates, everything's good. He's consistently, if you look at his data, he's consistently a double-digit barrel rate guy with league average EVs and launch angles. His pull air rate was really high last year. It was like 22%. So he's going to get to power. He's just one of those guys that, again, like you said, if he stays healthy, you just kind of set it and forget it. And just at the end of the year, he's, you know, flirting with 20 home runs. He's going to score, you know, in this lineup, probably like 65 to 80 runs and have probably 60 to 70 RBI. I mean, he finished top 30 of the position last year. It's hard to argue that. And I mean, he's coming back to a team that, you know, he had success there. If he stays healthy, I think it's a good value where he's being picked.
Yeah, I'm with you. I know in DC's for sure. I've taken chances there. I've only done one fab league, so yep. I can't talk about too much in that regard of targeting him, but I love the price tag. Like, yeah, it's a massive question. Does he put another season together? Because he hasn't really done that more than twice. So that's the million-dollar question, but very intrigued at that price point. All right, it's time to clean your sheets. Gavin Sheets, he'll be 30 this year. We have a trend going on the show. Like, Jackson Merrill kind of broke things on this one, but everybody else is pretty much falling in line. Sheets, 19 home runs last year at .252, pretty much his first full season of playing time in the bigs, which is funny. He couldn't do it with the White Sox, but did it with the Padres. Sheets ADP is .368. What are your thoughts on Gavin Sheets this year?
Yeah, a lot like Laureano, right? Played career high in almost everything. Games played, at bats, home runs, RBI, batting average. I mean, And they're letting him play every day. I mean, he had pretty much a similar amount of at-bats against left-handers that, like, Freddie Freeman had last year, which is means that he's not they're not going to platoon him. I mean, he didn't have great numbers against lefties. He had a 669 OPS with a 113 ISO, which is not great. But he's playing every day, and the volume will add up. And he hits really well against right-handers. 777 OPS, 17 bombs. You know, the quality of contacts, is the metrics are fine there. He's not striking out a lot. The contact skills have been better. And if you look at his chase rates continue to go down. So he's becoming more disciplined at the plate. I mean, he kills fastballs for sure. So if he keeps getting a steady diet of fastballs, he's going to thrive. When he sees spin, not so much. So unless somebody listens to your podcast that's in the analytics department somewhere, then they're going to keep feeding him fastballs and he's going to keep hitting them out. So I like where he's at. He's going to hit fifth in the lineup. There's going to be guys getting on base ahead of him, you know, the Tatis, you know, those guys, they're going to get on base. He's going to have a chance to drive him in. So the opportunities are going to be there. And I mean, given where he's being drafted, he's a perfect corner infield option or even a late utility option if you're looking that way. So.
Yeah, I agree. Like early draft teams, I was kind of ignoring things. But then, like with the Giants making the foolish signing of Luis Urias, it pretty much just signified the Padres are ready to roll with Sheets at first base, at least for the most part. Yeah, there might be something might change along the lines after this show comes out. They might still sit him versus the occasional lefty. Like, hey, they're playing Crochet for some reason. But yeah, probably give the kid a day off. Might be the best move. But you see that with even some of the best lefties in baseball. It's just reality. So for the most part, like you said, like they feel like, at least it feels like on paper, they want to give him all the playing time he can handle. So like, that's a big plus. And it also goes to, I just thought about it when we keep saying these guys play most playing. I remember this very much from playing DFS. And then also when Ryan and I did our Thursday night FAB previews, the Padres pretty much run the same lineup out every single week. They rarely ever, I know we still have half the lineup to go, but it just dawned on me. I'm like, I remember for a fact, they're like one of two teams. They had like maybe one platoon spot on the entire lineup. And it was just the same order every single day. That's what it was. Mm-hmm. And so you could count on it at least when it came to that. So
and look at their depth chart. I mean, get a roster resource and look at their.
Oh, you wouldn't want to use the bench.
It's horrendous. And the prospects, they don't have any prospects either. It's not like it's going to get any better. So these guys have to stay healthy. If any of these guys go down for any extended period of time, this team's in big trouble. They have no depth whatsoever.
That's so, so true. Jake Cronenworth, the artist formerly known as Rake Cronenworth, he had 11 homers, 3 steals at 246 last year and 136 games. 3 out of the last 5 years have been good, but it's just been an up and down Jake Cronenworth ride. But again, I guess a 3 out of 5 years is still better than not. ADP's 390, should play every day. Does that interest you?
Kind of. It's another guy that's boring, right? So I was looking at
32, by the way.
Yeah. Man, I try not to look at the Cronenworth too much because it's kind of just depressing because I want him to be good because he went to the University of Michigan, so I got to see him play a lot when he was in college. But it's just like one of those things where he's just not – he never gets there, right? So when he plays a lot of games like he did in 2024, he'll hit you 17, 18 home runs. When he doesn't, he'll hit you 10 to 12 home runs. So that's what we got last year when he played the 120 games. So batting average is going to be painful at times. He's going to hit 230 to 240. Counting stats are kind of the whole lineup's kind of that way. He did post a career high in OBP last year, which was nice. So that helps with his run production. But one of the things I really noticed when I looked at Cronenworth is he does a lot of damage in the first half of the season, and then he just tanks in the second half. So looking at 2023, he had 8 home runs and 33 RBIs before the All-Star break. 2024, and he was hurt in the second half, so that's part of it. 2024, 13 home runs and 55 RBIs with a 752 OPS before the All-Star break. Afterwards, 4 home runs, 650 OPS. Last year, 8 home runs, 758 OPS before the All-Star break. Second half, 3 homers, 727 OPS. So if you're going to get on in Cronenworth, get him for the first half of the season, and then put him on the bench or move on from him when somebody else gets hot in the second half. He is not a second half guy at all, which I didn't realize. He's always kind of, when I've had him, I've always kind of said it and forget it because he plays every day. But he's probably one of those guys that's more of a Gene Segura type. And if you know the reference, you know why. He just doesn't do it all year long. And that's a reason why I'm probably going to be out on him unless he's you know, a bench option, maybe in a DC, but at the price, you almost have to put him on your roster. So,
yeah, he's affordable in a DC. He's actually, like you said, starter. But yeah, I didn't realize the second half splits were that bad with him. That is a prototypical Gene Segura.
So, yeah,
that's a. That's very interesting. I'll have to, Bloom will listen to this, but that is one to remember for next year's Gene Segura episode because it probably won't change the way things are going. All right, we're going to get to another 31-year-old new member of the San Diego Padres to DH. This is just – okay, there's so many parts of that intro that should not work at all. Miguel Andujar was signed to a one-year deal to DH for the San Diego Padres. Oof. He's a good professional hitter is what I'll say. That's about as far as I'm going to go there. I'll let you fill in whatever blanks you want. His ADP is 435, so he is free, and he will play pretty much every day. But, yeah, it's bonkers. What are your thoughts on Miguel Andujar?
I mean, like, he had a really good year last year. I mean, he hit 318, slugged 470, which is pretty good. But, I mean, it was like a quote-unquote breakout year, and he hit 10 home runs and had 80 combined runs in RBI. And he was playing in favorable ballparks, too, in Oakland and or Sacramento and Cincinnati. So he was fine. He hit a 971 OPS in the second half with seven home runs, which is pretty good. Like you said, he's going to play almost every day, which it is what it is, right? I mean, it's the Padres. They don't have any depth. We just talked about that. So, I mean, I like the signing for the fact of, like you said, in DCs, he's a guy that you can just kind of plug and play. He's going to get, you know, eligibility in a couple of different spots. He's going to play in the outfield a little bit. He's going to play first base a little bit. So he's going to have at least multi-position eligibility for you as well. So he's a guy that you're probably going to see on a lot of fab shows throughout the year. And then he'll get dropped once, you know, the player comes back that's healthy. So overall, I'm not too interested in Andujar, but if I'm going to take him in a DC, then I'll just sit him on a bench until somebody gets hurt and hopefully he delivers when he gets in.
Yeah, he's definitely a streamer. He's a deep league play. Like, average will be great, but it's almost like a Luis Arraez profile. He's not going to run. He's going to give you minimal power much later than Arraez. Different position, but yeah. I trust Arraez more than Andujar. But, yeah, there's a lot of similarities at the same time on that one. Yeah. All right, let's go to the dish here. Freddie Fermin, who I always have a soft spot for. I think he's, like, very good. Will he ever light the world on fire? No. But, like, as a catcher, too, in a deep format or whatever – I think there's legs to Freddie Fermin. At the same time, like, maybe I hope there's more, but then I look, he's 31 as well. Good God. Freddie Fermin, ADP of 387. Like, that's outside of catcher twos, actually. That's catcher three territory there. What are your thoughts on Mr. Fermin?
Yeah, there's not much to say about Fermin. You know, he's a really good defender. We'll give him props for that. So he's going to play, you know, four out of every 5 days behind the dish, which is great because somebody's got to, and he's really good at receiving pitching and things like that. So it'll keep him on the field. He hits for a decent average. His contact rates are actually pretty good. He doesn't strike out a lot. He puts the ball in play. There's no pop really at all to him. He'll, you know, 5 to 8 home runs on any given year. And it's going to be a lot of ground balls and things like that. But I mean, if he can get on base, even at like a 310 clip, he'll probably score, you know, 40, 50 runs and probably have 40, 50 RBI. So it is what it is. It's a perfect C2, and, you know, the volume will be there. So worst case scenario, at least you're not taking a complete zero from your catcher. He's going to at least hit you for average and occasionally contribute other places. He's not going to kill you. So.
All right. You wanted to put this name on here, and I'm glad you did, because I've been a Luis Campusano fan for a long, long time. He can't play defense, apparently. That's why they keep sending him to AAA. But the bat plays in my mind. Now, obviously, you've probably written about him for the last 7 years because he should have been the top prospect for a long time. And, again, has not got his due here. So I'm really curious when you actually texted, hey, I want to talk about him. I'm like, yes, please do, because I've always liked him. And I'm very just, like, kind of over the fact that they won't play him. But it feels like they almost have to based on what we keep saying about the lack of depth on this roster. His ADP 632. So barely drafted. Actually, if you look at the last 7 days, he was drafted in every draft. Okay, I'll give him that. What's your take on Campusano, since you wanted to discuss him, and I am all ears?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. He's a terrible defender, and obviously that's part of the problem. But the bat is actually really good. If you look at his numbers on granted, it's in the PCL, so we know there's some favorable environments. But 336, 441, 595 slash line last year. 25 bombs, 83 runs scored, 95 RBI. That's a big year. And he spent part of the year with the Padres, if you remember, early on. 53% hard hit rate, 12.5% barrel rate, 108 mile an hour, 90th percentile, which is 5 miles an hour over the major league average. He's hitting the ball hard. And if you look at the underlying metrics on him, he chased a lot less. He had a 10% dip in chase and swing rate last year. So he's less aggressive. He's being more patient and getting his pitches, and he's doing damage when he's doing it. He also went more pull heavy last year. He took an 8% jump in pull rate, and the power just kind of went with it. So, I mean, if he's going to see 30 to 35% of the action behind the plate, he's also going to DH, because at some point they're going to realize he's a better hitter than Andujar. This is a guy that's going to have the offensive impact to be potentially putting up like Keibert Ruiz, JT Realmuto type numbers with the power and the production. I think he's going to finish pretty well as a catcher if he plays as much as I think he's going to. The bat's just really good. And eventually, you know, they need run production in this. They don't score a lot of runs as a team despite all the star power they have. He's a guy that can get to some power. He's going to drive in some runs. I think he may end up being their primary DH by the middle of the season, and Andujar just kind of goes back to the bench where he belongs.
That would be outstanding. Plus, Andujar can play a little third, play the outfield, play first base. Like, he can kind of move around too. I hope so, because, yeah, like everything you said, I've watched. I've wondered what the heck's going on. I've been thinking it really needs to play more and hit more. So, I'm with you 100% on that. So hopefully that is the case. All right, let's head to the mound, where it doesn't get much better for the Padres. we joke, but somehow they're going to finish second in the division. This is what they're going to do. So they do this every year, and I laugh because not even the Giants can somehow keep up with them. Michael King, coming off that great 2024, when everyone was like, wow, that's an innings jump. What is going to happen here? Then he gets hurt. Bad pillow, mattress. I don't know what all took place there. It just escalated from there. But he's back on a multi-year deal, so quote-unquote must be healthy, Martin. I have so many questions here, but his ADP is 135 over the last 7 days. So people are buying him. They're in. What are your thoughts on Michael King?
I guess the biggest sign that they think he's healthy is that the Padres actually brought him back. They were the team that handled him all year. They were the team that's had him for 2.5 years. They obviously felt confident that he was at least healthy enough to bring it on a multi-year deal, or else they just let him walk because there's no loss at that point. So, I mean, the results were pretty good when he was pitching. I mean, 73 in the third innings, they were decent. He had a complete game shutout in the fourth start of the season against Colorado, which it is what it is, Road Rockies, right? But, I mean, there's durability issues, obviously. We've seen one season of a starter's workload. He was hurt last year, whether it was the shoulder or the knee or whatever the case may be. The stuff can be good. It can be really good. The changeup is really, really elite. And he goes with the changeup. So if the changeup's on, he's going to be really nasty and he's going to be a big strikeout guy. If not, he's going to be middle of the road. So it's just whether or not you feel like you can trust the durability with him. And I know I don't think I've gotten any shares of King this year just because I've had that concern about durability, but it's not like I've purposely been fading him just for that reason. So I think, would you say the ADP was on him?
Like 135, 136, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, there's guys I like in that range more than him, but if he came to me and all my guys were gone, I wouldn't hesitate to take him. I just haven't to this point. So good stuff. The innings should be quality when he's healthy, but how many innings are you going to get?
Yeah, that's my question. Because I agree. I think if he's, you know, healthy or they're putting him out there, I love the pitcher. I think he's very good. I'm just curious what we're going to get out of him because he had that big jump, then hurt again last year. So he's shown he can take the big jump again if he's healthy. Mm-hmm. So I guess it's just a combination of, like, what's your risk tolerance? Because where you're getting him, he's an SP2 or even SP3. So it could be like last year, you had to draft him as almost an SP1 where he was going. So if you're playing the ceiling play game, he's like the way we talked about Jackson Merrill's price dropping. That's how Michael King is, which, like, do you trust their ceiling or their floor type deal? So I could see the King appeal again. It's just I'm such a cautious drafter, and that could be to my detriment where I just pass on guys like King. But again, he could be a guy that you play the game, and if he hits, he hits big, and that's a massive value chunk right there. Nick Pivetta's a guy that hit big last year for everyone's wanted him to hit big forever. Career high at innings pitched. Ratios were great. Strikeouts were there once again. I talked about him on FPAS, so I already know my thoughts on him, so I want to get yours before I say too much. But Nick Pivetta, this is where it's interesting. I said Michael King's like 135. Nick Pivetta's ADP is 92 over the last 7 days. So he's going 40 picks ahead of him. Three rounds, essentially, in a 15. What are your thoughts on Nick Pivetta?
I mean, I think we know what Nick Pivetta kind of is, right? I mean, he's kind of a middle-of-the-road guy. And I think last year, people are going to see the numbers, and they're going to think, wow, this guy's, you know, potential ace. But when you really dig, it's kind of scary. So the underlying stuff doesn't support any of his performance. He had a 287 ERA with a 399 xERA. His BABIP against was 235, which is just incredibly low. Guys hit 193 against him because of the BABIP. I mean, it just none of it makes sense. If you look at the quality of contact, 11% barrel rate, 45% hard hit rate, guys were teeing off on Pivetta, and they were just hitting it right at people. And so very, very lucky. Lucky is the word. And a lot of the luck came with the fastball, which hasn't always been his best pitch. He's had issues commanding it. The curveball is usually pretty steady, but the fastball last year, he just had a lot of luck. I like Pivetta as an SP3, maybe as an SP4. I can't get on board with him as an SP1 or an SP2. There's just too much volatility there.
Agreed. Like, I've always believed in the strikeout skills. I thought he's always a good pitcher. But the guy we got last year, a lot of luck involved, a lot of home run luck involved. Like, first season in San Diego, so maybe the ballpark did help to an extent, but at the same time, it was a gigantic, like, chunk. And if it takes a step back, he'll still be very good. But to your point, where you're drafting him as an SP2, like, I don't think he's an SP2, and maybe he can prove me wrong, too. I've always drafted him as an SP4 or 5, because that's where he went, and you're like, okay, I like the upside there, so that's great. Now you got to pay the piper, and it's like, comes down to, do you take a Pivetta there, or do you take a King 40 picks later? Because I think we can – I won't speak for you, but I feel like we could both agree that if King pitches a full season, he outpitches Nick Pivetta, and we're 40 picks apart, and things just change tremendously.
Yeah, I agree completely.
All right, now this one, I'm just avoiding it again, could be my detriment. But Joe Musgrove missed all of 2025 after Tommy John surgery. He had injuries previously, like dropping dumbbells on his toes. That's why we just say don't work out, kids. It's so much easier. But we know Musgrove when he's pitching, good ratios, decent strikeouts. ADP is 236. Again, missed all of 2025 though, so there are questions. What are your thoughts on Joe Musgrove?
Yeah, he's not really a guy I've ever targeted in the past. I kind of thought coming into the year that I might take a couple shots at him just because I thought he'd kind of be out of sight, out of mind. But with an ADP of 236, I mean, he's clearly not out of sight, out of mind. Pitching is just so hard to come by, and I think that, you know, his reputation kind of precedes himself. So people are going to take their shots at him because of what he's done in the past. That's a long layoff for a guy that's 33 years old. I'm concerned. I don't love it. So I'm out on Musgrove at the price. There's just too many things that can go wrong. They do say that he's not going to be on an innings limit, which is nice. I'll be good without him.
Yeah, I think he's not on an innings limit because they need pitching, because we're about to get to the rest of this rotation. Wowzers is the way I'm going to say it. Randy Vasquez is their number four. Like, Yu Darvish retired, so that's part of the reason. But, like, Yu was kind of a broken man last year as well. Randy Vasquez, like, I'll give him credit, pitched 133 innings. Like, they needed all of those. Ratios were good, massively overachieved. His ADP is – this goes to tell you, this stuff – like, we make fun of, you know, NFBC elites and all this stuff, but there's a reason we use NFBC ADP is because sharp people draft, for the most part, in NFBCs. You see Randy Vasquez, you know he's locked in a rotation, so you think innings, innings, innings in a DC is great, Martin. His ADP is still 653. Like, no one wants to draft Randy Vasquez. They're taking shots on every seventh starter in a rotation right now before Randy Vasquez. So I'm just going to leave it at that now after I've buried him and haven't put – you can put the dirt back on if you want, but what's your thoughts on Vasquez?
Yeah, one of my favorite moments of the offseason so far was that somebody tweeted out the Padres' projected rotation. And I literally said, it'd be nice to have Robbie Snelling right now. And 5 minutes later, I get a notification that Robbie Snelling liked my tweet. So that kind of made it all come to perspective. So Vasquez is just, he's just a guy, right? I mean, doesn't miss any bats, doesn't strike anybody out. And he walks guys. He's got an almost 10% walk rate with a sub 14% strikeout rate. That's brutal. I mean, if your K minus walk is less than a superstar's war, that's a problem. So, and his XERA is always just super crazy. Last year it was 537. It's never been below five at any point in his career. I will say though, if you can start him at home, you have a better option, you know, a better chance, I should say. The 328 ERA last year at home and a 324 the year before versus a 607 on the road in 24 and a 450 on the road last year. So if you're going to take a shot on him for any reason whatsoever, do it at home at least. At least he can keep the ball somewhat in play and have a little bit of success. But other than that, I would rather take a zero than start Randy Vasquez.
Yep, can't argue any points there. The Snelling thing, that's good. That's real good. JP Sears, like, again, I'm not running to target JP Sears, but I've never minded JP Sears. I really enjoyed him when he was at the Oco Coliseum. That played to his skill sets very well. You know, strikeouts are mid, but his ratios don't destroy you, I guess. And he can get you innings. I'm trying to sugarcoat this the best way possible. But his ADP is 560, so he's free. What are your thoughts on JP Sears?
Yeah, there's not really a lot to like other than his command. He throws a pretty good amount of strikes, doesn't walk a lot of guys. But he's had back-to-back seasons now with a home run per nine rate of almost two, which isn't great. Even in that ballpark, it's not going to help. He just gives up a lot of hard contact, and there's a lot of fly balls. The one thing that I noticed about his batter ball distribution, though, is that he's doesn't give up a lot of pull fly balls. He's actually pretty even in pull and straight away. So if there's anything that's going to save him, it could be that. But for the most part, he's going to be a streamer against maybe Road Rockies or somebody like that, or just an NL-only type arm for me. I get that people want him to be great because they gave up Leo DeVries to get him, or as part of the reason to get him. But, I mean, Mason Miller too, but I just don't see anything there with Sears, but he's going to get the ball every fifth day because they don't have much else. So I guess he's going to have some viability for someone somewhere.
Yep. I will be streaming him when the Rockies come to town, and I'll tell you that much, but mm-hmm. It's about as, yeah, I won't be running to play him, but there's just something. I remember rostering him so much when he was with the A's in Oco. Like there was times when it was so glorious there. Oh, yeah. I haven't seen those glory days in a while. And then just for fun, I was looking at the depth of like the minor league starting pitchers. They have like 12 non-roster invitees, just someone trying to catch gold. It's so bad. They have depleted everything. If there's an injury or two on this team, I don't know what's going to – they're going to sell everything they can. Mm-hmm. Let's go to the bullpen. You mentioned the DeVries situation, and that goes where Mason Miller was the key cog in that wheel. Maybe they convert him to a starter when they have to. Yeah, I hope not. I pray to God they don't, but that's always the joke. Miller's one of the top closers off the board, ADP of 27. Right now, over the last 7 days, I'll let you wax poetically if you so choose, because he is just an absolute freak on the mound.
Yeah, he's a monster. The stuff is just so elite. 100th percentile in almost everything, XBA, fastball, velo. His fastball was 101.2 last year on average, which is just stupid. And the problem, I guess if there's one knock I have on Mason Miller, it's his fastball. You can get his fastball. Like, you can actually get it. It's kind of flat. There's not any outlier characteristics for as far as movement goes. And when the command gets a little wonky, you can actually get to him. But if you don't get his fastball, you're not getting anything else, because the slider is really great. He actually throws a really good changeup too. I don't know if he gets enough credit for it, but if he would use it more, I think he could really get people off the fastball and become even better, which is really scary to think. He had almost 23% swinging strike rate on the changeup last year, but only threw it 3% of the time.
Wow.
So I'm wondering if maybe there's more to that. If they can kind of unlock that a little bit more, even if it goes up to like 7 to 9% in that range and takes a little bit off the fastball, there's a guy. I mean, this is a guy that's already putting up elite numbers. I mean, we're talking RP1 in the bag. If he can throw this changeup more and get people off the fastball, because you can have your way with it, even though it's hard. you can still have your way with the fastball. So other than that, I mean, there's not much else you need to say. He's just so, so good. He misses so many bats. He didn't give up any barrels at all last year on his slider, which is just bonkers. And he throws it almost 70% of the time for strikes with that pitch. So, again, it's all fastball related. The walk rate was up to 12% last year. But, again, it's only the fastball. Everything else he throws for strikes very consistently. He's just a horse. There's just no other way to put it.
Yep, no, I love him. RP1, I definitely could see as well over Edwin and company. No arguments there whatsoever. Any other relievers to look at here? Because they do have a couple electric guys. You have one of them written down for sure.
Yeah, I put Estrada down just because he was so good last year. He converted 3 out of the 6 save chances he had. 13.3 Ks per 9, which is really good. And if you look at his stuff up against Miller's, he's pretty comparable as far as the elite stuff, as far as the metrics with XBA, fastball velo, chase rate, all that good stuff. And the Padres had 65 save chances last year, 67 and 24, and 64 in 2023. So they're playing a lot of close games. So there's going to be chances. And Miller, they're still going to baby Miller. They're not going to let him throw back-to-back days very often. They know that there's a history with the elbow there. They're not going to put him in danger. So Estrada's going to get some looks to close games. Morahon probably will as well. They've just got a lot of depth in that bullpen, and that's the reason why they're winning so many games. That bullpen is electric. Even guys like David Morgan could get some save chances when Miller's down. So I had Estrada listed just because he's so good. And I also noticed, too, that the Padres relievers led the league in wins last year as a group. So that's also interesting. They're playing a lot of close games. They're coming back, coming from behind late. So something to consider. Estrada's a guy that's probably going to be rostered in a lot of DCs for sure as a handcuff. But he's also a guy that has good enough ratios that you could start him as your third reliever in a fab league if you needed to. So
that's a good call out on the Winston, because as bad as that rotation is, you know, you got Michael King, you hope he's going 6 or 7. Pivetta, usually if you get 6, you're happy. So Musgrove coming off TJ. Most of these guys are going 5 or 6. You got to have a bullpen to make things happen, especially, you know, Rodriguez and Sears might go 4. So yeah. You have to figure that out. Let's talk prospects. He joked before the show, they've traded most of them away because it's true. What are we looking at here in the prospect world?
We are looking at nothing. We have nothing. No, I guess if there's one guy that we can mention, it's Ethan Salas. Everybody knows the name by now. There's no fantasy juice for him at all. He can't really hit. But defensively, he's an outstanding catcher. He should debut at some point this year. If Fermin or Campisano goes down, I would imagine he'll get the first look. But he's not going to do anything for you with the bat. He cannot hit to save his life. He hit 188 last year in the minors. So there's not really much. And, you know, they've got a couple of pitchers. Bradley Rodriguez is decent. Miguel Mendez is decent, but neither one of those guys has any major league experience. Their farm system is just bad. I mean, they're number 30 on my rankings. They're terrible. They have nothing for fantasy. Yeah. They've got a couple of young pitchers that are potentially going to be good, but they're both 19, so nothing soon.
They traded it all away. Like, they went for it. I'll give them that much. Like, there's a lot of teams that they don't go for it. They went for it. They brought in big boys, but obviously it didn't work out. Is the best way I'll say it. And it got close, got real close. Yeah. But
they're trying to sell the team because their owner passed away. I think it was last year, the year before. So they're not going to take on a bunch of bad contracts because they already have a bunch. So,
yeah. Well, they've been rumored trying to get rid of some of the ones they got. I think it's loose rumors, but Tatis was dangled at some point. It's obviously they're trying to move whatever salaries they can. They're trying to go the Twins route, but not that cheap at the same time. Yeah.
Well, who gives a 38-year-old a pitcher a 6-year contract? They did that with Yu Darvish, and the guy's cooked.
Yeah, that's not ideal. Not ideal by any means. All right, last question we have here. I know you're not a Padres fan, but let's just put it into the ether. What are your expectations for this team this year? Do you think they're 500? Do you think they challenge the Dodgers? Like, where do you think this one goes?
It's a big if. If they stay healthy, they'll be a wild card team. They're not going to win the division. There's no chance. The Dodgers are just head and shoulders above everybody else. Talent-wise, they're they're good. But again, we talked about the depth. There is no depth. If one of these guys gets hurt, they are big time trouble. If Tatis goes down, if Machado goes down, I mean, they're in a world of hurt. They have nobody coming. They have no reinforcements at all. They'll either have to hit the trade market to try to recoup some of that value, or they're just going to tank. So 500, anywhere between 500 and a 90 win team. How about that?
Yeah, that was kind of the joke that Mason and I even made with the Giants. It's like, yeah, if you're in the West, you basically just come into the season trying to get one of the two wild card spots because we won't get all three of them because the Dodgers pretty much have the division. So you have no chance there. So you try to fight for that wild card and see what happens. And again, to your point, like if healthy, the starting nine on the Padres can play. They're really good. They just got to stay healthy. And that's the big question for every team in baseball.
Yeah.
All right, Martin, before we head out of here, remind everybody where they can find you and what you got going on because you have a million things. You're a busy man.
Yeah, it's been busy. It's been a great offseason. Yeah, so still over at Pitcher List, working on Dynasty stuff over there. We've got a couple things coming out in the next couple weeks, some prospect battles that I'm doing with Matt Heckman, who sounds like he'll be on the show in a couple days here as well, so that'll be nice. Over at the Bubba and the Bloom Discord, working on their draft kit. Actually on the Patreon, also on the Discord, but working on some stuff with the draft kit, as always. Running my Substack, putting out new content, trying to do it every day, but taking a little weekend off for the birthday, so that'll be fun. But, yeah, never ending, and got another project in the works coming up, too, so
beautiful.
Keep an eye out that.
Good to hear. The busy man doing busy things and staying busy and busy, because it's good quality work there from Martin. Always enjoy checking it out. That's why I like having him on the show and helping us out. So make sure you follow him on Twitter at @m_ski22. Martin, thanks for joining me. As always, we will chat again very soon, probably. All right, everybody. This was Bench with Bubba, episode 833, your 2026 San Diego Padres team preview. Catch y'all next time.